live from Jackson's Bar and Grill. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
4 o'clock hours brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyer. 766-1400 is the number. Yes, we are hanging out at Jackson's Bar and Grill just on the west side, Las Vegas. Flamingo and Jones, so come on in. $20 steaks. That's all the time. Great breakfast. Tremendous menu of bar food and other items. I got the turkey wrap a few weeks ago. That was freaking awesome. Battleborn Injury Lawyer, 766-1400, 766-1400. Make sure you dial 775 in the north. Griffin is back in the Finley Toyota Studios. Vanessa's helping us out here at the set at Jackson's. Thanks to Brian and Robin and the rest of the crew here at Jackson's for hosting us once again. Let's go out to Chicago and catch up with Xavier Pope on a myriad of topics, especially NBA, but some other good stuff out there, including a couple of funny points. We got to get to a discussion of bath towels, but that's coming up. EP, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, pretty good. How you doing, Steve?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I found some really interesting stories today that I had no clue, and I really like to lean on the attorneys on stuff like this, especially when it's governmental stuff, because you're more familiar with the stuff than I am. I saw another note. We've been following all these stadium projects, and we do that because here in Vegas, we're always building stadiums and arenas and trying to get a baseball stadium done. The groundbreaking was on Monday. I know the Browns are trying to get a new stadium. I had not seen this note before. I don't know if you had, but part of the money that Cleveland is going to pitch towards the stadium comes from the unclaimed state funds to the tune of like $600 million. Had you ever heard of that before? And is that in every state? I mean, do they have coffers that big?
They have pretty big coffers, Steve. I don't have the numbers on each state's individual coffers of unclaimed monies, but they are significant. Whether they're states or lottery tickets, it's just a myriad of different things that people have. I know I've looked up for myself to see if I had some money. The answer was negative, but to use $600 million, though,
that's crazy,
to build a sports stadium instead of using it to help the population that lives there, I think that's unfortunate. There are many people in Cleveland who would really want that to fund some sort of programs, development programs, anti-poverty programs, anti-racist programs. I think to take that and give that to a sports team is it gives you a second look at that and the priorities of Cleveland.
Well, it's a challenge in every city in this country to come up with funding to support the things that really need to be supported. And I wanted to ask you about just conduct, the way people carry themselves, civility. New York is setting up for one of the wildest mayoral races that we've ever seen, because I've already seen this Mamdani labeled a lot of different things who won the Democratic side. We know the mayor, Eric Adams, is going to be an independent. Curtis Sliwa is involved in it as well. The language that is going to be used and the attacks on each other and the attacks by people who are involved in politics is going to be off the freaking charts, because that's kind of where we are right now around the country. And in some ways, I was thinking maybe this is a good thing. This is the way regular people talk. But then I draw back a little bit, and I'm like, I feel like public servants and politicians are supposed to be a cut above us and not get in the muck and talk about things like that and be that insulting.
Steve, you sound like you're having a conversation from 10 years ago. The ground has moved underneath you. Like, what do you, like, that question, I wait, what?
Back in my day.
You just jump in the past? Yeah, I mean, that we've long reached a path. We have incivility in politics. We're living in a society and the democratic crumbling with and how people handle and treat each other. And that's just the language and what's acceptable. But I think that the behavior in terms of people who are in positions of power to say things about Mamdani and his ethnicity and his religion and use it as a way of xenophobic and racist attacks on him, I think it's disgusting. And I think it's going to get worse. You're going to see different types of videos, different types of political cartoons, statements by those that are in political media and things towards him. And it's going to be get discussing. It's just the very beginning.
Xavier Pope is with us. Let's get into the NBA draft a little bit on a couple of fronts. First of all, nice night for your alma mater. You are a Rutgers Law guy, and Dylan Harper, too, and Ace Bailey, number five.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard of that happen at Rutgers. You know, two guys in the top five, pretty big for the school, pretty big for recruiting at the school, considering the school has been really working on making sure they get that presence outside of New York City. So I think that that's a big boost for them to be able to do that.
What do you think about players trying to dictate or, you know, once they are picked, they want to dictate where they go. Once they are picked and it's not the choice they want, kind of showing openly that they didn't want to go there. Is there a problem with that with Ace Bailey and Salt Lake and Utah? Because he didn't seem real thrilled to be going there.
Yeah, I've said this many times, Steve. The draft itself is an outdated model. And it is anti-economic in terms of how it to interest of the different players. I don't think it should exist. Players should be able to sign with whatever team they want to sign with when they come out and declare to be pro and see who gets the highest bidder to those different players. And they will go up according to where they want to go. I mean, whatever it's, say 50 guys get drafted or whatever, unselected draft picks, it becomes a free agent. You're going to see that happen even without a draft. So that's what I think about it.
Yeah, as an example, you and I both finishing at that school, you know, you didn't have to go to Sheboygan, and I wasn't taking a radio job in Paducah because I was forced to. I went where I wanted to go, and that was Las Vegas, and you settled back in Chicago. So I often think, you know, regular people out there will get mad at someone like Ace Bailey, and it's like, well, would you want to have it predetermined where you're going to be for the first 5 years of your career? Number one pick is Cooper Flagg. And I saw you retweet or you threaded, I don't even know what it's called, posted on Threads or rethreaded, a post from Sporting News who had a list of all the Dallas Mavericks players with Kyrie Irving and AD and Cooper Flagg leading the way. And it said, who's stopping this Dallas Mavericks squad? And the answer was kind of the same throughout.
Injuries. Yeah. I mean, that's I mean, come on, man. I posted a meme that my neck and my back, you know, from Friday. It's unfortunate you have guys on that team have potentially to get hurt. You have Kyrie Irving. You have Anthony Davis on that squad. And so and you have Cooper Flagg, who is just coming into the league. And so and you have, of course, you have, you know, former Flagg brothers and Thompson. So I think that you just have a team full of guys. So how long could they even stay on the court at the same time to be able to compete for a championship?
You know, I didn't see the graphic when I first saw my neck, my back. I thought it was the song. I thought you were making reference. I seriously did. I was like, well, okay. All right. Xavier Pope is with us talking a little NBA draft, talking some NBA. You didn't like the KD trade for the Rockets? I think it's the perfect fit there. And they were, you know, they 54-win team. They were right there in the West. Maybe they're the team that can actually catch up to OKC with KD.
Well, I didn't say I didn't like the trade. I just said that the trade, I don't think it improved the teams. I just thought that KD to the Rockets, does it make them – can they get the second seed in the West next year? Yeah. Can they win in the playoffs? Maybe. Championship? No. I mean, I mean that team is a pretty big team. That was an advantage they had over other teams. Whether they can keep that up, they have a great coach. To do that next year, I'm not betting against them. I don't think this makes them significantly better than they were before.
EP is with us, David Pope. You know, there's a lot of things about social media that drive us nuts. One of the things I do like is it does make the world a smaller place. It brings us to places that maybe we wouldn't have exposure to otherwise. And I've been watching what's going on in Venice, and Bezos is over there trying to put on his $48 million wedding. And, man, the folks in Venice do not like Jeff Bezos at all.
Man, they had this caricature of him holding a box floating in the river, so in the open. It wasn't like a small little character. It was a pretty big, like life-size thing floating around.
Yeah, I saw a giant flag unfurl that, you know, basically it was him, and it just said, pay your taxes, which we know in this country that is an issue with these guys at the highest level. They're billionaires, and it doesn't seem like they put much into the system.
But at the end of the day, I think that people are waking up to realizing that there is a power and economic imbalance to how things are happening in the world. And so I think there's now a class situation that we're seeing unfurl across the world. I think Europe is early in catching on to it and making sure they're keeping some things back. But I think that eventually that may spread here to the United States.
In the sports world, we are touched by this, and it's going to happen more often. And what I mean by we're touched by this is the mega billionaires are the ones who can really afford to own sports franchises. As I mentioned to you, we had a groundbreaking at the beginning of the week with the A's, and John Fisher is rich. He's from the Gap family, but he's not rich, rich, rich. There's worries about him funding the stadium, and guys like Bezos would actually be the kind of dudes who could come in, you know, buy the A's, get the stadium done, maybe be part of an ownership group. Bezos could for the new NBA expansion franchise, not official yet, but we think we're getting it. It's kind of a weird zone we're in. Like, you'd love to have an owner who, you know, you enjoy what he did or what he does to get all of his money, but we don't get to pick and choose anymore because it's worth so much money.
Steve, you have zero control over it happening. He can go down to City Hall and complain, but it's just going to happen. And whoever the guy who has the most money is going to get the team, and it's going to be what that is. And that's what, I mean, we could talk about the Saudis and the Lakers. I mean, whoever has the money is going to buy a team. That's just what it is right now.
Fill the audience in on that one. With Bomani Jones said something about the $10 billion the Lakers went for and Mark Walter, but it could have been.
Yeah. I mean, he said at least it wasn't the Saudis. And I think that we've talked about this on the show plenty of times, Steve, about some of the human rights abuses and the live golf and the situation with being in part of ownership in professional sports and what that looks like in terms of funding money that maybe not necessarily be that may be funny.
Yeah. Well, the sports washing has been going on for about 5 years, and I don't know how much you follow boxing, but a big character in boxing now is Saudi Turki Al-Sheikh, who's putting up money to make boxing matches that have been nearly impossible to book. So he's part of this Canelo Crawford fight. We're having that fight here, September 13th in Las Vegas. And I got to tell you, maybe I'm the only one, but when I was watching the press conference in New York on Monday, to see Turki Al-Sheikh there at the Javits Center, which is like 4 miles from the World Trade Center, it made me feel a certain way. I'll just say that.
Oh, man. Everything is out the window, man, with all this stuff, man. History's out the window. Decorum's out the window. The money's there, and the people are going to care about the money. That's
people
it.
Just forget. Yeah, people just forget. Money can buy forgiveness, I guess, for some.
Yeah. I'm glad that you're saying that you're not comfortable with that, Steve. I think that's still important for that to be said and be a part of the sports talk landscape.
Well, yes, and especially as someone who's in journalism, I was watching, they had a press conference in Saudi Arabia, and I was like, man, this media group is really, really sullen and quiet, and I kind of felt the vibe like, hey, they're afraid to ask questions, which we know there's a history and a recent history. Hey, last one. You had posted something on Threads that I thought was kind of interesting. I got like 20 seconds left. About bath towels. Why is there a line on bath towels? Did you find out the real purpose?
I didn't find it out. No one could say it. I don't know. Do you know, Steve?
I don't know. Confused. No, now I'm going to have to. We're both going to have to do an investigative work, and that's a reason to have you on next week, amongst others. Xavier, love you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Love you guys.
There he is, Xavier Pope. Make sure you check out his video up at Steve Cofield from his last appearance, where we were talking about Stephen A. Smith and his kind of his odd behavior around NBA stars.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling, presented by Jackson's Bar and Grill, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Big UFC week here in Vegas, UFC 317. UFC X is on the ground, their big expo. Press conference going down today. Canelo Crawford going down tomorrow. We'll check in with Rosh Markazi in the 5 o'clock hour. He's out covering all these festivities and kind of everything around Las Vegas. We are here at Jackson's Bar and Grill. Flamingo and Jones, 6020 West Flamingo. Come on in, $20 steaks. They have that all the time. Garlic marinated bistro filet for $20 and the 1 pound ribeye for $20. You get the veggie of the day and you get your choice of 7 different sides. Sam Paniadovich joins us for a special Thursday spot. What's going on, buddy?
I saw this yesterday. North Carolina college basketball has not had a top five pick in 20 years. And can you name the last player that was an NBA All-Star from Carolina? I dare you.
I don't think I can. Who is it?
Vince Carter, 2007.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that
crazy?
Scary. That seems like that's not good.
keep going. Yeah, I mean, especially, I mean, you can still be a really good program without having a top five pick. I mean, they're the best of the best. But we know that Duke recently has had an amazing run.
Duke's had multiple number one picks over that span. Kyrie, 2011, Zion, 2019, Paolo, 22, and then Cooper Flagg, who, by the way, is already minus 250 to be Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, we want to get to that for sure. God, I was trying to just get an old reference. Oh, there was a North Carolina player taken second. The Andrew Bogut draft. The reason I remember this one, and especially since last night, I guess a lot of people were hammering on Stephen A. Smith for his involvement in the draft. He was just ranting and raving, kind of unrelated to the draft. If you go back to that 2005 draft, Bogut was the number one pick, and I remember Stephen A. Smith going crazy during the draft, and I thought to myself, you don't know anything about anyone in college basketball. Why are you involved in this? Why are you going crazy? And, of course, now I can't find the freaking guy's name.
Marvin Williams.
Marvin Williams. I don't know why I keep wanting to call him Marvin Jones, but that was the Florida State linebacker. But he loved Marvin Williams, who had a career, but certainly not worthy of the number two pick in the draft.
Did you watch last night?
I watched some of it, and I got to tell you, this has been my thing, because I'm not as big an NBA draft guy, clearly, as I used to be, because I didn't watch a whole lot of it. I kind of checked in for updates. But I've never really understood the philosophy of having a bunch of NBA people cover the NBA draft when they cover the league. They, you know, give us information about the league and what the teams think, but they don't watch college basketball, and they certainly don't watch international basketball.
I thought the lack of college knowledge was alarming. Now, they did two broadcasts last night, ABC, ESPN. I watched the one on ESPN, which had Billis, but then you got a bunch of other people that clearly haven't watched the college game, and I thought Fran Fraschilla, Where's he at?
He's amazing every year because he's one of the guys for the international players. You got to have him on there.
They were breaking down tape from, you know, this kid from China, and you could tell nobody even knew who he was. And I thought that was an issue. So then you got Perk like, yeah, if he gets his fitness together, it could work out. You're like, he's never seen this kid before. So
I think I've seen more of that guy on – seriously, he was a big hit on – TikTok and Instagram. I was kind of intrigued by him, but that doesn't make me an expert. I saw some film of him, and I was like, God, this guy's gigantic. He's young, and he kind of moves really well for a 7'2 guy. Like, he carries whatever it is, 240, like it's nothing. But I just gave you more than I think Kendrick could, so there you go.
Right. It is what it is. The most awkward part yesterday is when they bring out the whole family for the interview.
Yeah.
And it's cringeworthy because the kids in themselves are 18, 19 years old. Most of them are nervous. It's also the biggest day of their lives, and then you got this reporter trying to be buddy-buddy with them and then asking the family and the little brothers questions, and they're all terrified, and nobody knows what to do, and then it's, all right, back to you at the desk. Yeah.
Well, you're referencing the Knipple family came up there, and he's got like 38 brothers who are younger than him, and she simply asked, like, hey, who, you know, in a backyard basketball game, who's the best? And they were like, they wouldn't say anything, like, speak. Weird, man.
Maybe the kid who went fourth in the draft is the best player, though. What a dumb question.
I think you would hope. I know amongst bigger families that I would probably say I'm better than my older brother, but you know, she didn't get that magic. They didn't react to that one. Okay, so let's talk about the betting impact. First of all, how much booking of this event was there around the country?
Around the country, it was fair. Limits were low. Markets were minimal. I know that a lot of books in Vegas weren't even taking NBA draft. And remember, we talked about this in April. A lot of books were very, very uninterested in booking NFL draft. And I don't think there's anybody booking NHL draft in Vegas. It's just a market that these guys know they can't beat. And again, we saw some players. Knipple 2 weeks ago was 6.5 over under. And then he got all the way down to 5.5 under minus 1,000. The information comes out, and the information is usually undefeated. I don't know that you were able to bet more than 500 if you know what you're doing, if that makes any sense. You know, a lot of people I respect and that I talk to that were looking to get down were just getting limited. because it doesn't feel like a game of chance to odds makers and bookmakers. They feel like the people are going to get information before them, and that's why the markets aren't as crazy. You don't have as many over-unders, and then you don't have books in Vegas even entertaining the thought of playing it or booking it because you know you're going to lose. They call it a loss leader, these drafts.
What was the action on Ace Bailey? Because, the story before the draft was, hey, he's going to orchestrate his way to get to D.C. There's no way one of these teams that didn't work him out in the top four, well, three and four, are going to take him. And then, lo and behold, guess what? The Jazz took him anyway.
They basically, most books, I work for MGM, most of the books had Ace Bailey 2-1 to go fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth because they had no idea. So they just made him, cheap. They didn't want to get burned on any of the possibilities, which is sort of a nice way to try and protect yourself. I mean, there's no reason to give away a guy at 5 or 6 to 1 when you don't know, and it could be anywhere. And how about him saying that, he didn't want to work out in Utah, and he didn't want to interview with them. And Danny Ainge says, whatever, I'm going to bring you to Salt Lake City anyway. But he was basically 2-1, 250 to go four different places, and that was the books basically saying, we don't know, so we're not going to give you any big numbers.
I saw that Bet Sweats, and we're talking to Sam Panayotovic, I saw that you guys put together a list of worst NBA draft picks of all time. Was there someone who shined for you? Was there maybe a sleeper that people forget?
I put Kwame Brown number one overall. The hype we heard on him, that was Jordan's first big number one pick as an executive. And it did not go to plan. But Joe and I both had Sam Bowie very high. I had him second. Yeah. I think Joe had him first. That, of course, is the guy that went after Hakeem and before MJ.
Right.
Not great.
I mean, a lot of it is. I saw your list. A lot of it was you got to compare it to who was missed. You know what I mean? Who they missed on. Bowie actually was a decent NBA player. Was he a number two pick? No, because he was hurt the whole time. I actually think the worst one, and I didn't realize the reference made sense with this time, was Kent Benson. Let me go way back. 1977 at Indiana was the number one pick. He's actually the last white American to be the number one pick, and he was not good in the NBA.
It really depends on how you feel about your list. Darko is another one.
Darko's a good
Darko
one.
Yes. Wasn't Carmelo exactly afterwards. The worst player, but you consider the All-Stars or Hall of Famers around him. I believe that's LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, and there's one more. Not Chris Paul. I'd have to go. Oh, Bosh.
So, yep. Unbelievable.
Around Bosh, Wade, LeBron, and Carmelo, the Pistons take Darko number two.
Yep. And the Pistons were in the midst of a championship run. Imagine if they had kept Carmelo Anthony. It might have changed the history of the Pistons organization. Okay, I got to get to the Eastern odds for the NBA. This is insane. I know you made the point up on social at SP Shoot on Twitter that the Bulls are 250-1. I mean, I have no idea who to bet in the East. I'm certainly not betting the favorites, the Knicks and the Cavs.
Those prices stink too. And you're betting on two teams that haven't really performed when the pressure rises and the best players have to be the best players. I mean, Cleveland, granted, they were a little bit banged up, but they were favored in every game against Indiana and fell flat. And the Knicks don't have a coach. And whoever the next coach is has to inherit a team that was built up by Tom Thibodeau, got him the 50-plus wins, got him to Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and then they kick him out. So now you got to take his guys and make it work. It's not a great situation. Then there's Orlando, very young team, but very trendy team.
Yeah.
450 to win the East? Nah, man. Let's go into the double digits.
Yeah.
How about Philly, 12-1? Jeff Sherman's got him 9-1 at the Westgate. He's big on their potential. A lot of things have to go right, of course. You need Embiid to stay on the court, Paul George to stay on the court. But that's a decent core. Embiid, George, Maxey, they had the third overall pick, Edgecombe. Philly 12-1 though in Vegas, and I got a guy that really likes the Pistons at 16-1. He's basically saying whoever wins the East will be sacrificed to the West in the finals, but that's not what the bet is. The bet's not to win the whole thing, it's to win the East. And if you go down 10-1 or higher, man, you could find Philly, Detroit, maybe even Atlanta 25-1. I don't like those teams to win championships, but if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, you're in a great spot to hedge no matter what.
Sam, today's spot's a little bit shorter because we're at our 420 block. So I just wanted, in about 30 seconds, I saw in Bet Sweats that you guys were talking about MLB Reliever of the Year. What are we looking at for the market?
Well, it's probably going to be Edwin Diaz of the Mets if he can just stay healthy. But that's a market that is already pretty top-heavy. It's Munoz in the American League, and then you got a couple guys in the National League. But it's something you could find value in if you go a little bit down the board. Like Helsley for the Cardinals is 10-1. Don't think that's the worst idea. But you're always looking for the best number at the right time, buddy. You know that.
A lot of season left, too. A lot of season left. All right, Sammy, have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you back in our normal spot next week on Tuesday.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for playing Smash Mouth for me, too.
I know, right? Well, I got the bar ambiance, man. They have a good jukebox here. I might be playing some songs for you. Send me some demands, right? Some asks. That's what I meant to say. It sounded like something else. it sounded like something else. All right, Sammy. We'll see you, buddy. We'll come back. We're going to hook up with one of the UFC fighters in town to talk a little John Jones retirement, UFC 317 in less than 15.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from Jackson's Bar and Grill on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, Griffin, what are the plans tomorrow? I know you're going to be out covering UFC and UFC X. You going in the morning?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go down to UFC X down at the convention center, get some possibly some great interviews with some really good fighters that'll be down there.
Possibly. Who makes it great, you or them?
Oh, it's always the fighters who make these interviews great. If the interview's going to be great, it's because the fighters, you know, they open up, they share, and it's just good, wholesome conversation.
You have to get them to open up. You have to get them to share the right things.
100%.
It's on you, buddy.
100%. I agree.
Do you think there's any chance you know, I don't even know how tall this guy is. I was going to say hulking, but for all I know, the Liver King might be 5'4". I don't think he is. You want to tell people about the Liver King and who he is before we mention the news on him?
Absolutely. So the Liver King, for anybody out there who's not aware, he is a social media influencer who kind of made a big name for himself going online, making videos, and really talking about like the health benefits of eating like raw animal liver and all these
raw unprocessed organs and meat, focusing on the daily intake of liver. He calls his lifestyle an ancestral lifestyle. It's all natural. He's been making money off of this. His real name is Brian Johnson, but then there was a little problem with the all natural part, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. Honestly, anybody who takes a look at this man, I mean, is it really that hard to guess?
No.
When there's some juice in somebody?
No.
It's really not that hard. Anybody who, you know, bought into this back when he was at his hype and were buying his, you know, raw liver meal plans, I'm sorry for you. You ate nasty stuff for no reason.
What a freaking scammer. But I better be careful because I might get some threats here. But, yeah, he sold this whole lifestyle, and then he gets outed for, you know, being a steroid user, which, you know, no surprise by the build. And one of the biggest critics of the Liver King has been Joe Rogan, who is very much into fitness. He often talks about diet and natural diet and what works for him, as Rogan's in like his mid-50s and still pretty shredded up. But I guess he went at Liver King that this guy, Brian Johnson, got so pissed off, he started threatening him, and the Liver King got arrested. Uh-oh.
He did. But, hey, there's a little good news. He got released. You know, I mean, good news for him. But there are some restrictions around his release. There's a no contact factor in his release where he cannot contact on social media, text, anything with Joe Rogan. He's got to stay with it. He's got to stay, I believe, 200 feet away at all times.
200 yards.
200 yards. You're right.
By the way, that's not really much of a restrictive order. That you have to stay 200 yards away, which means that if he wanted to skulk around Las Vegas, he could do it. So I honestly don't know what he looks like right now, because the pictures that TMZ was posting of him and then the mugshot, he looks horrific. So maybe all the stuff he was taking that wasn't natural was helping him. He looks like he is breaking down. His face is just a nightmare.
Yeah, boys and girls out there, don't eat raw liver. If you do, Maybe seek out the guidance of a health professional and not some guy you see on a YouTube video, you know?
Yeah, I don't think – I guess here's the bad news. If you were looking for a hulking figure to spot as a dangerous guy around Las Vegas, if he decides to just say screw it and he wants to be around Joe Rogan, he actually doesn't look real tall. And I don't mean to say this a bad thing about UFC fans, but he appears to be about a 5'9", muscled-up guy with a big beard. That's with the crowd in town this week, it's not exactly going to stick out like a sore thumb. So, but yeah, he's in some pretty serious trouble. So yeah, it was the bail was $20,000, or the bond was $20,000. And you're right, Griffin, restraining order. He's got to stay away from Rogan. I mean, at this point, if Rogan doesn't have a security guard with him all the time, he's insane, because I'm sure he gets threats often. But keep your eye out. Liver King, arrested in Austin, Texas. But who the hell knows? Maybe he's on the ground here in Vegas. Be careful out there, everybody.
It's Cofield and Company, live from Jackson's Bar and Grill on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Cofield on the road, you heard it. Flamingo and Jones, come on in. Get a great steak for $20. They got that going on all the time here. Best steak value in town. Jackson's, Flamingo and Jones. Griffin's back in our Finley Toyota Studios. I'm feeling good today. There's a lot of inspirational stories out there. Some not so inspiring. I will concentrate on the downer first and then get to the inspirational stories. One, Griffin, you saw the bad news on the mixed martial arts media front today. You know, I started covering UFC way back and was on the beat for, well, I don't know, like 10, 12, 14 years between doing stuff with our Fox affiliate here in town and then ESPN Las Vegas and then Yahoo Sports and then SiriusXM. And I'm going to tell you what Sirius did today in terms of programming, but it's kind of disappointing because I think the sport needs to be covered, and I'm not sure we're going in the right direction. But we're covering it because we got a big event here in town. UFC is one of our, you know, essentially a sports franchise here. They've got their big convention. They've got fighter appearances at the convention and then all over town. And Dominic Reyes is nice enough to join Griffin and me, Steve Cofield, here on this Thursday because he's got a lot going on. Dominic, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you guys doing today?
We're good, man. We're good. We're glad you're in town. First of all, let's talk about some of the promotional things you got going on, some appearances, some meet and greets. Do you know what are you doing over at UFCX? Are you there? Are you tied to any sort of promotion? What's going on?
So I just got done signing a bunch of cards for Fanatics and Tops.
Nice.
Like right before talking to you guys, we had like a conference with Meta today talking about social media and hanging out with influencers and other fighters and whatnot. As far as my schedule, man, it changes every day. It's a lot. Like that. Pop-ups and stuff and signings tomorrow at UFCX at the convention or the expo. And yeah, man, it's always great to be in town, hanging out with fans and meeting the fans and, you know, feeling the love.
So tell me about the social media discussion. What'd you learn? Anything eye-opening? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was really cool, very informative. It just comes down to the same thing. It's just you got to do more. You got to do more. You want more, you got to do more. And that's really what it is. You know, talking about different formats for posting and times and like what Meta's like moving towards in terms of like monetization and things like that and how to make the most of your social media presence. So it was really cool.
Yeah, I kind of buried the lead there. I'd forgotten that Meta and UFC had done a deal, so that's a hell of a partner. I mean, in the end, right, for all of us, but especially you guys who are famous or bordering on fame, you want to brand yourself anyway because you don't know when this is all going to end, and you can actually get to the point where you can make money after your career, right?
100%, 100%, bro. It doesn't last forever, and this you know, social media could help us, you know, have income outside of fighting and set ourselves up for what's next. We could use it as a springboard with our popularity to do something else, whether it's acting or politics or whatever we want to do, you know.
Do you, Dominic Reyes is with us, UFC fighter. Do you want to do either one of those? Or did you just randomly mention politics and acting?
I'm interested in both. Okay. But we'll see. We'll see. I gotta finish my mission here first, and then, you know, maybe I'll be the next senator over here trying to make the country better.
Look at you. I was going to make a smart remark about being tackled in California by security guards. Maybe that wouldn't be so easy with Dominic Reyes, but I'll move on from that.
Not at all.
Right. So I want your expertise, and at least you have it in the ring, and I'm sure you know of, and you've been around enough, or you know people. Dominic, what just happened with John Jones and his retirement? You got to give me your thoughts on him just moving on from what could have been a mega heavyweight fight, and he's done.
Yeah, it was very weird. I feel like we all kind of feel the same way. It was like, what the world? Just one day decided not to do it anymore or something. I don't know. There's a whole legal thing going on in the background that could have something to do with it. People are speculating. But I don't know. I think that would have been a great fight. I personally think Tom would have won. But that's my opinion. It's just unfortunate that we didn't get to see him, you know, one last time against the best heavyweight in the world right now.
Why do you think Tom Aspinall would beat John Jones?
I think Tom is very similar to myself. He's just bigger and stronger. You know, he's really dynamic. He moves well. He's young. He's fast. He doesn't just stand there and let you hit him. So, yeah, I think Tom would have really gave John a real hard time, and he's aggressive like I am.
Dominic Reyes is with us, UFC light heavyweight champ. He's got appearances coming up at UFC X. I think one of your pop-ups, I don't know if you're that familiar with Vegas, but I think it's right in the middle of the strip across from Aria. That's tomorrow night, right? Aren't you doing another signing tomorrow night at like 6 o'clock?
Pop-up, yep, for Full Violence. That's that's supposed to be real fun. You know, I've seen their videos of their other pop-ups and stuff, so it should be fun. They'll have my merch there for sale as well, so if you guys want to pick up a shirt or anything like that, it'll be there, and I can sign it for you. So good time to stop by, grab a shirt, and get a sign by me.
And that one's going down. The address is 3747 South Las Vegas Boulevard. It's the third floor terrace, and as I mentioned, it's right across from City Center and Aria and all the other properties there. Dominic Reyes is with us. Can we go back to when you fought John Jones and what at that time, and he's a, I mean, I have to say he's a different guy. I mean, obviously we all get older and we change. What was it like being involved in a promotion with him?
Oh, it was surreal. It was definitely like a dream come true. Like I'm doing exactly what I set out to do. I'm fighting John Jones, you know. I'm like, my whole purpose coming in as a mixed martial artist was to fight him one day and beat him, you know, and I got to do all that and face off and hear his snarky remarks and the whole deal. He didn't disappoint, you know, he was John Jones to the fullest. And he just didn't expect Dominic Reyes. He didn't know what to expect from me, and I brought it to him.
That was back in 2020 at UFC 247. The fight was in Houston. At what point in the fight, you know, when you get to the third round and now you're in a championship fight, like at what point in the fight were you like, okay, I'm in this? Or was it from the beginning?
Oh, it was before the fight.
Really?
as soon as I saw him walk in the arena and I was looking at him, I'm like, let's go. He's just a man. Like I wasn't nervous or worried or anything. I knew exactly what I had to do and I was focused on it. And I was like, let's go. I was just such a big opportunity, and I had nothing to lose, and I was having fun.
Dominic Reyes on the horn as we're getting ready for UFC 317. So you mentioned earlier that you think part of being able to compete with Jones was being as big or bigger than him, and you know Aspinall is bigger than him at heavyweight. For a lot of you light heavyweights now, you look at the heavyweight division, and you know they kind of booted Ngannou, Now Jones is gone. The division really hasn't had a great infusion of newbies, and especially American fighters. Do you think about, like, I don't know what you walk around naturally. Do some of the guys at 205 who were cutting down anyway think about, you know what, let me just be a less than gigantic heavyweight, and maybe I can make a bunch of money up there and make some real headway. Have you thought about it?
I have thought about it before, but honestly, man, I'm a big guy, but they're bigger. Their frames are bigger. Their hands are bigger. It's just the next level. That's why there's weight classes for a division for a reason kind of thing. Like, you could weigh as much as you want, but physically, your features, you're just a bigger human being, you know? Obviously, I could go up there and be a fast heavyweight and, you know, hopefully not get hit, but, like, I'm having a lot of fun with my division right now. And I still have to complete my goal of, you know, becoming champion outright. So I'm not going anywhere.
What is your natural weight?
Right now I'm walking around like 230.
Okay. So you're not small, but like, no. You said, there are guys who cut to 265.
Exactly. Or they're like 255, you know, solid. Like Curtis Blades, one of my good friends. He's a big dude, you know.
By the way, what did Blade say about fighting in Azerbaijan?
He said it was cool. He said it was he liked it a lot. He said the traveling was rough, though. It was a rough, rough traveling.
That's
especially after a fight, because his face.
That's what I was worried about.
Like, yeah, that sucked. But he got the dub, so it hurts less, you know.
All right, so give me your take. Dominic Reyes is with us, UFC fighter. Give me your take on what 205 looks like now, because obviously there's been a reshuffling in this year of 2025.
It's fun again. There's a bunch of guys that are coming up and putting on good performances, and there's a lot of potential matchups for me, and that really excites me. I just feel like I'm one or two away from the title, and once I get the belt, I'm going to hold on to it for a while.
So in the gyms, when you guys talk about the UFC, and there's been a change like the last 5 years. You've got a lot of guys who were former Soviet Union fighters. They have a lot of the similar fight styles. Obviously, Ankalaev is the champion. What's the talk in American gyms about the infusion of a lot of the former Soviet Union folks who have a specific skill set? I mean, they are mixed martial artists, but what do you guys think of them?
So Ankalaev is the champion right now. So, I mean, he's the guy we're all kind of chasing. But they're good. I don't know. I don't really worry. My biggest thing is worrying about myself and what I got to do and maximize my potential. If I was worried about anybody else, I wouldn't have performed the way I did against John and everybody else I perform against.
All right, we are with Dominic Reyes, UFC light heavyweight contender. Dominic, first of all, shout out to you being from the Hesperia, California area. You know, I lived in Victorville myself a little bit. I want to talk about a little bit, you know, go a bit more in the past, talk about your football days. I know you've been a few years now removed from them. You're now, you know, professional MMA fighter. But do you ever look back on those days in football, and do you still ever get little tidbits when you think back, you know, to your training or your recovery? What from your time as playing football have you taken with you into your career in MMA?
Man, football was it was amazing, right? Like, the brotherhood, that's the biggest thing that I miss about football. But what I've taken from the sport is the balance and the ability to work in space. I played safety. So working in space is my thing. When I'm in the octagon, my spatial awareness is super, super good. And I'm able to work angles really well because I understand angles so well because of football and playing safety and having good footwork. So my footwork has translated really well and my hips over to fighting.
Dominic, we appreciate it. We're up against it. Let's get you on before your next fight, and let's talk some more football, because Griffin, who was just asking the question, he played his football as a defensive end at Utah, so we'll get into football, maybe a little college football. And have fun this weekend in Vegas, and everyone get out there 6 o'clock tomorrow night right in the middle of the strip to see Dominic and kiss the babies, shake the hands, take the pictures. Thanks, dude. We really appreciate it.
All right, bro. Thank you. Have a good one.
There he is. Dominic Reyes from the UFC in town for UFC 317.